Welcome to the Cashflow Ninja, the podcast sharing how to create and grow income streams and manage, multiply, and protect your wealth in the new economy. Are you tired of trading your time for money? Do you desire freedom today instead of retirement in 10, 20, or 30 years? I'm MC Lobsher, and this is the Cashflow Ninja. This is Cashflow Ninja. I'm MC Lobsher. Thank you so much for spending your most valuable resource, your time, once again with me on the show. In today's show, I'm going to talk about the lessons learned from history. And friends, if we look back at history and we look at what's happening right now, there's a lot to be very, very concerned about. Very concerned about. I mean, we are right now living during a time, it's really unbelievable. It's what it is, of deceit that we couldn't imagine, misinformation, lies, propaganda, and fake news. I mean, it's absolutely everywhere. Most people are confused, and that's not a surprise because we are really living during a time frame. I think that no one really could have imagined so much misinformation fake news and propaganda being put out. So how do you survive and navigate and make actually decisions in a time where there are so much lies, deceit, misinformation, propaganda, and fake news? There's three things that you can do. The first thing that you can do is you're going to have to invest in data and information. So you're actually going to have to pay for certain subscriptions or publications. There's some really, really good companies out there that put phenomenal information and data out and continues to put it out. And I'll share two with you, Shadow Stats by John Williams and the Trends Journal from Gerald Celente. So you're going to have to make an investment in data and information because the decisions that you're going to make for yourself, your family, your business, and all of the stakeholders involved with your business and your investments are only going to be as good as the information on which those decisions are based. So you're going to have to invest in information and data. And number two, you're going to have to join and invest in communities. Find like-minded communities. Find communities and plug into them and invest in them where there are people that are like-minded and value the same things that you value. You're going to have to go tribal. Right now, you're going to have to go tribal. So find communities where there are people that value freedom, right? That want to build amazing lives for themselves, their families, their businesses, and all the stakeholders and the people involved with their investments. So plug into those, invest in those communities, but you're going to have to go tribal. Number three, you're going to have to think about your thinking and critically analyze and critically think about everything. You cannot just take data and information and just rely on it as being accurate, regardless of where it comes from. As a matter of fact, you know, and I encourage people every single time when we share information on the show, please do your own research and think for yourself, right? So you're going to have to think about your thinking. We share an exercise called Thinking Time within the programs that we offer at Cashflow Ninja and the importance of it to block off some time daily and think about your thinking. And there's models and frameworks and structures that you can use to do that. But those three things already are going to give you really a leg up on everyone else that is so confused of all the conflicting data and information that they're receiving daily and that they're bombarded with. And if you're purely just relying on old media platforms for information, you're screwed. You're absolutely screwed. So you're going to have to invest in data and information, getting accurate data and information. You're going to have to invest in communities, and you're going to have to critically analyze and think for yourself and figure things out. In today's show, I'm going to talk about lessons learned from history. The information that I'm going to share in the show is extremely powerful. We talk about this information and share this information within the programs offered at Cashflow Ninja. It's been extremely powerful to have access to this information. I'm going to share a lot of this with you in today's episode. So lessons learned from history. There's five lessons that I'm going to share with you. The first lesson is we've learned nothing from history. That's lesson number one. Lesson number two, history does not necessarily repeat itself, but it sure does rhyme. It's a quote by Mark Twain. Lesson number three, the victors write history, as Winston Churchill says. Napoleon also said history is a set of lies agreed upon. Kind of the same thing. Lesson number four, human history is the history of ideas. It's a quote by H.G. Wells. And then number five, our history does not have to be our destiny. Our history does not have to be our destiny. So let's jump in to our first lesson. Learn from history is that we've not learned anything from history. I'm going to start with a huge event that just played out, and that was the U.S. withdrawal and military withdrawal from Afghanistan. Now, Afghanistan has been the graveyard of empires. Alexander the Great was defeated there. The British Empire got a massive defeat there, embarrassing defeat, black eye, bloody nose. By the way, the stories of that war that the British in there, I mean, it's just incredible. One of the stories is the Khyber Pass. Go and read it up. Do your research on this. It's quite incredible if you love history. But there was essentially 16,000 British soldiers that had to basically withdraw out of Kabul. They suffered a defeat at Kabul. They had to withdraw, and they started to move out of Kabul to the next town that was about 90 miles away, but they had to go through the Khyber Pass, right? They had to go through the Khyber Pass, and essentially they were escaping. 16,000 soldiers. They went through the Khyber Pass. All of them were killed. But one, there was actually a Scotsman, a 30-year-old Scotsman. There was an assistant surgeon by the name of William Bryden that was the lone survivor. And there was a rescue party that eventually started looking for these guys because no one was showing up. And they eventually came across a body that had some life in it. And this was the 30-year-old Scotsman. And eventually when he regained consciousness, they asked him, "Where is the army?" And his response was, "I am the army, sir." So this is history in Afghanistan. It's not been an easy place for any empire to go in. Look at what happened to the Soviet Union. And of course, the United States assisted the Mujahideen in the war against the Soviets. The Soviets suffered a black eye and a defeat there too and had to withdraw. Within 2 years, the Soviet Union no longer existed. It ceased to exist. One of the big global superpowers. And of course, what happened in the past month was a humiliating withdrawal of the United States. Now, we could see what happened to the Soviet Union and the decline of their empire or their position as a superpower after the defeat in Afghanistan. The United States, and by the way, it wasn't the fact that the United States withdrew. This was the longest war, 20 years that they've been in there. And everyone knew after the release of the Afghan papers that the war was never going to be won. They were never going to win the war. And the Afghan papers showed the American people, anyone that was paying attention, how they've been lied to by leaders, by the media, and by everyone. So it showed all the lies already from that war, and it showed that the war was never going to be won. So it wasn't a surprise that they were going to withdraw from Afghanistan. And of course, the U.S. on the world stage, for the entire world to see, had it was humiliating. It was an absolute spectacle. It was chaotic. It was humiliating. It was embarrassing. It showed the absolute competence of incompetence, rather, of leadership in Washington, D.C. and in the U.S. military. There's a lot of people in the military that said this. I mean, every single mistake that could have been made with a withdrawal was made. It was embarrassing, and it was displayed on the world stage for everyone to see. I got so many text messages from around the world, from friends saying, what is going on? This is embarrassing. The reason why I'm sharing that is this impacts business owners and investors directly, because the empire, the U.S. empire, the global superpower, the country with the world currency reserve status, were just put on their back foot and just got a black eye and a bloodied nose, and they've been knocked up against the ropes in the ring. So what happens next? You know, what moves will other superpowers make, like Russia and China? And again, it doesn't necessarily have to be warfare, kinetic warfare. You know, in the 21st century, information warfare and economic warfare is the way that most wars are being fought. It isn't necessarily kinetic, where bombs are being dropped and bullets are being fired like people think of warfare. So essentially, it's interesting to see what moves will be made by China and by Russia. And again, economic moves, not necessarily military moves, because the country, the global superpower with the world reserve currency, is on their back foot. So it's going to be interesting to see how this played out. And again, you know, the reason why I share this with the first lesson, we haven't learned anything from history, is if anyone just looked at history itself, they knew that going in to a country such as Afghanistan, number one, it was never going to end well at all. Never, ever, ever going to end well at all. And at the same time, we have the 20-year anniversary of the 9/11 attacks coming up in a couple of days. You know, on September 11, 2001, the World Trade Center was attacked in New York City. And as a result of that, the attacks and invasion of Afghanistan started. Gerald Celente, that's been a frequent guest on the show, a great man, at that stage was an absolute darling of the media, favorite, you know, a guest to have on whether it's Fox, whether it's CNN, whether it's Oprah, whether it's Matt Lauer, it's morning shows, it's afternoon shows. I mean, his yearly trend predictions were published in USA Today. They loved him. And Gerald Celente looked back at history and just looked at what was going on and said, there's no way the United States wins in Afghanistan. It's a massive mistake. They should not go in there. They should absolutely not get involved in that war. They're going to lose. And of course, he was banned. He was banned from all media. They never had him back on. And essentially was called unpatriotic. He looked at history. He learned from it and saw that this was unwinnable. It was never going to be. America's longest war, 20 years. So in 20 years, in Afghanistan, there's winners and losers too. And this is the big takeaway here. There's winners and losers. So who are the winners? Well, people would say the Taliban. The real winners in this war was the elite. The elites that are currently positioning themselves and asserting themselves on we the people, because that's the real war going on right now. It's the elites versus we the people. But the elites are the big winners of the Afghan war. How? Julian Assange, one of the few remaining journalists on the planet, in 2011 said that the war was essentially a great way to extract taxpaying money from a taxpayer base in G7 countries, the United States specifically, and funneling it over to mega corporations and military contractors. And those military contractors made fortunes, fortunes. I mean, we've seen the number thrown out. I've seen 1 trillion. I've seen 2 trillion. Trillions of dollars were made by these mega corps, these military contractors in that war. And they were the real winners of this war. And I mean, just think of the off the book stuff, the kind of the black market of the opioids. The poppy fields in Afghanistan as well. Just think of the money that has been made just on the heroin that has flooded cities in most Western countries. If you're living in a Western country, especially in the United States, close to a big city, there's an opioid epidemic in your city. And most people know, whether it's friends or family members or someone that was either addicted or that has passed away from the opioids, right? But there was a fortune made with the poppy fields too. Then, of course, there is one of the world's largest deposits of lithium there. There's rare earth minerals there. I mean, so there were folks going in there and mining that. So there was a lot of money made. There was a lot of money made, and those were the winners of the war. The losers were we the people, the families that send their sons and daughters, the brothers and sisters, the uncles and aunts, the mothers or fathers to Afghanistan, and they died on the battlefield. And also, losers were the U.S. taxpayers that had to fund and pay for this, and American families that suffered losses because of opioid addiction. So those were the huge, huge winners and unfortunately the losers. And where this comes into the lesson, number one, of learned from history is that we haven't learned anything from history, is that the military contractors, the fortunes made by them, is now being replaced by the big pharma, the drug cartels, the real drug cartels, in the war against COVID. Fortunes are going to be made. Fortunes are going to be kept by big pharma in this war on COVID, just like military contractors made fortunes against the war on terrorism. If something is as profitable as the war on terror, you keep it going for two decades and you extract as much taxpayer money from we the people as you possibly can until you cannot anymore. And then someone else takes over. Just look at the big pharmaceutical companies, where just do your research in your favorite web browser and just put in pharmaceutical profits. You will see that all of the companies, all of the big pharma companies that are involved with the injections are making a fortune and have record profits already. So when things are this profitable, it's not going away and it's not going to stop, because it's in their best interest to keep this going. They want clients and customers for life because it's so profitable. So we haven't learned anything from history, because we saw with war, it's extremely profitable, and they're just going to keep it going when it's this profitable, because the real winners are the people making money from it. The same thing is happening with the war on COVID. The real winners are going to be the pharmaceutical giants. They're going to make an absolute fortune from this. The other thing that I also wanted to point out is that, I mean, there's so many things happening here simultaneously, but we just had a massive date that just happened too on August 15th, 2021. And that was the 50th anniversary of fiat currencies around the world. So when we look at the money system has changed every 30 to 40 years. If we go back a little over 100 years, we'll see that the Federal Reserve Act was enacted in 1913 and signed into law, which created the Federal Reserve Bank. Fun fact, I just visited Jekyll Island, where they actually drew up the legislation. But essentially, the Federal Reserve Bank was created, and they started to create money to fund World War One, and then the U.S. entered World War One. Then, if you go forward a couple of years, you'll hit World War Two, and World War Two is a different ballgame. Fought on the continent of Europe mainly, also in Asia. I mean, Europe was absolutely decimated. At the end of the war, Europe was destroyed. Most parts of the Soviet Union was destroyed. Asia was destroyed. I mean, they literally dropped two nuclear bombs on Japan The United States came out of that war as a global superpower. There was no war fought on the American mainland, although there was an attack at Pearl Harbor, and the U.S. corporations also made a lot of goods and services and sold that to countries that were fighting in the war, and trade deficits were settled with gold back then. So a lot of gold was making its way to the United States mainland. Which was stored at the New York Fed and in other areas on the United States. So the U.S. was in a position of power, and in 1944, they signed the Bretton Woods Agreement in New Hampshire, which put the U.S. dollar as the reserve currency of the world. And of course, countries could convert their currencies to U.S. dollars, which they could then convert it to gold. This then was... basically ended by Richard Nixon. Not basically, it was ended in 1971 with the Nixon shock, when Richard Nixon closed the gold window and stopped the convertibility of US dollars to gold. Of course, between 1944 and 1971, the US entered foreign wars such as Vietnam and spent a fortune on that. They rolled out massive welfare programs in the United States. Lyndon Baines Johnson did through his Great Society programs. So they were spending like drunken sailors, and the majority of the world said, whoa, what is going on here? These folks are spending like drunken sailors, and they have all of our gold. We are starting to lose confidence, and we are actually going to want some of our gold back, and we're going to start converting some of our dollars back to gold. Charles de Gaulle from France actually sent ships to come and collect France's gold from the New York Fed, believe it or not. Interesting fun fact. And Richard Nixon at that stage started to panic. And they were left with no option but to close the gold window, and they did on August 15th, 1971. And since then, the entire world has been on a U.S. dollar standard, and we've had fiat currencies. And if you look at history, again, if you want to learn something from history, is that fiat currencies always lose their value, regardless of the fiat currency, regardless of the time period. When there's no backing of a currency, the value goes to zero. So every 30 to 40 years, the money system has changed. We've had 50 years of fiat currencies, and we are now in the process. That's why it's so important to understand this. We are in the process of a creation of a new money system. Most people they're not going to see this coming. They're not going to understand the economic and financial shock which is about to happen to the world, because we're going to see a rollout of a new world money system. And of course, it is all to do with power and control, right? If you have control over the money, you have all of the power and control of the world. Those are the folks that rule the world. Meyer Amschel Rothschild said, give me control of a nation's money and I don't care who writes the laws. Because he understood that if you have control over the money, you are in charge. And this is what's going on behind the scenes. We've seen a lot of things sneaking into the media about there should be a Bretton Woods 2.0, a call for a new Bretton Woods agreement, says the IMF. You can look up all these things online for yourself and do your research on it. A lot of folks have called for a new Bretton Woods agreement or a new world money system. So that's what's going on behind the scenes, and a lot of it points towards central bank digital currencies replacing the current fiat currencies. What the pecking order would be, what the new reserve currency would be, maybe it would be a bundle of currencies. You know, a special drawing rights by the IMF has been floated out there by people such as Jim Rickards, which is a previous guest on the show. What it would look like, we don't know, but we do know that central bank digital currencies are on the shelf and they're ready to go. They've already been tested. You know, again, do your own research. They've already tested this at MIT in the United States. They've already rolled out and tested this with the civilian population in China. So central bank digital currencies are ready to be rolled out. It should scare every single person on this planet, if you look into it, because it's not cryptocurrencies, it's artificial intelligence. And essentially, according to the Bank of International Settlements, they had a character that looks like the penguin in the Batman movies that was at a press conference that essentially said, this will give them full control. You know, we'll give the governments full control over money because it's programmable money. It's digital. It's artificial intelligence. You would have a U.S. digital dollar wallet, for example. You would have a euro digital wallet or a pound digital wallet or a e-rand if you're in South Africa digital wallet. And governments could send you, for example, $500 to a U.S. digital dollar wallet and tell you you have 48 hours to spend it if they want to stimulate the money or stimulate the economy or rather with the money. And if you don't spend it, it just goes away. They can also program the money that you could only spend it on certain things like essentials, right? Housing, food, and clothing. It'll give them full control over it. And like I said, this character from the Bank of International Settlements, which is the central bank's bank, this character that looks like the penguin in the Batman movie said, you know, without batting an eyelid, that this will give them full control. So essentially, this is very important to understand. So lesson number one, we've not learned anything from history. It's the first lesson. The second lesson is history doesn't necessarily repeat itself, but it sure does rhyme. So I mentioned 20 years ago, on September the 11th, 2001, the World Trade Center was attacked in New York, a city in New York. I was in the United States at the time. I remember that. The nation was absolutely shocked. I think the world was shocked. I mean, folks were just completely caught off guard. They were in a state of fear, of shock. There was uncertainty. There was chaos, confusion. I mean, people literally were in a state that really, a state of shock is the best way to say it, right? And what happened? What happened during this? Well, there's a saying, a lot of folks are saying that, you know, Rahm Emanuel, and quote, I'm saying, never let a good crisis go to waste. But this has been used throughout history. If you just take a look at different specific parts of history, there's been similar sort of quotes. But the government stepped in with a massive, massive power grab. The Department of Homeland Security was created. The TSA was rolled out big time at airports. The Patriot Act, which is the most unpatriotic piece of legislation ever, was signed into law. There was essentially a mass surveillance state set up in the United States and in most Western countries to fight terrorism. This new war on terrorism was declared. And then if you look back at history again, history doesn't necessarily repeat itself, but it sure does rhyme, you know. Look at what happened to the war on drugs. Drugs just increased, right? Never went away. It's still on the streets. We have an opioid epidemic in the United States. What happened to the war on poverty? We have now more poverty than we've ever had before. So the war on terror, when this was all set up, at that point, if you just picked up a history book, you knew that we were in for a very, very long war. And they even stated it at the time that this is going to be the war of all wars. It'll never end. And it still has not ended. But essentially, I think the point that I want to drive home here is that people were in a state of shock and governments grabbed as much power that they possibly could at that point in time. Now, history doesn't necessarily repeat itself, but it sure does rhyme, from Mark Twain. In 2020, we had the COVID-19 virus that broke out all over the world. And let me just say this, is that we're on about 200 countries in the world. The world is an amazing place. We have so many different people all over the world, races, cultures, different parts, right? Different foods, different music. We have different worldviews, different beliefs, different religions. That's why the world is so incredible. That's why people travel. I love to travel. And that's why people still continue to travel, because you want to experience something different, a different worldview, a different tradition, a different culture, different food, different spice, different everything. That's what makes the world so great. And if you just look at, you know, just take food for example. You know, you take beef. How many different varieties of beef and the way that it's cooked? How is that done all across the world? There are so many different ways to do it, right? Because we all do things differently. We even think differently because of where we are born, right? And the models and frameworks that are given to us, our paradigm, our worldview, our beliefs and belief systems. I mean, it all impacts that. But in 2020, every single government had a massive power grab, and they had the exact same solution, regardless of what country you were in. They all came up with the exact same solution in lockstep in 2020. They all addressed this problem exactly the same. All of the doctors all over the world, all of the medical experts, which I'll say that in quotations, and you'll probably bear with me if I do that, of what we're seeing right now, but all of them came up with the exact same solution. It was a government power grab, the likes that we haven't seen since September the 11th, 20 years ago. It was some of the most draconian actions ever taken by governments. And at the time of recording, this is still going on, by the way. This has not stopped. Governments took as much power as their citizens was willing to hand them. They were not going to stop until citizens started pushing back. And again, people were in a state of fear because the fear factory went in overdrive. The old media, formerly known as the mainstream media, people were in a state of shock. And these folks tried to grab as much power as they possibly could. And of course, the draconian things that governments did was just quite incredible. We know that they locked citizens in their houses. They shut down small and medium enterprises all across the world. While, of course, big mega corporations were allowed to stay open. They told their citizens to put masks on, where every single independent study showed that there's no science backing that. Fun fact, 99.9% of researchers and studies find exactly what the people paying for the studies want them to find. But jokes aside, there was no independent science behind this. The same thing, no independent science behind the lockdowns, no independent science behind the social distancing. And even, you know, the spinned research that was foisted and used, foisted on nations and just propagandized beyond belief, still couldn't convince the majority of the people because it's just plain common sense. And most people are now aware of that. But essentially, they locked them in their houses. They closed down their business. They mossed them up. Social distance. Don't talk to your neighbors and so forth. And most people started to realize that something nefarious was going on when you saw things like the following. You're just a couple of things that happened, which should have alerted most people that there's more at work here than just a virus. So the first thing was, in 2020, which was an election year in the United States, there was mass demonstrations and protests by the Black Lives Movement group. They, through their mostly peaceful protests, burned down the majority of major cities in the United States. Catherine Austin Fitz and her team at the Solari Report did a fantastic study looking at areas that were damaged and by these protests, by the way, and found that the majority of the damage was done in areas designated for opportunity zones. Fun fact. So big mega corporations like BlackRock would come in and buy it up on the cheap. But I digress. So you had the Black Lives Matter movement protests and Antifa. And the old media and on most media platforms, most people said that there was no risk in spreading the virus amongst the people that participated in these protests at all. But at the same time, the current president at that time, Donald J. Trump, had rallies for his supporters, and these were referred to as super spreader events, and they were attacked. Now, regardless of what you think of him and his rallies or any of that kind of stuff, any person that takes a step back and critically look at this, and that's why I said in the beginning of this, you have to critically look at all of these, would have come to the conclusion that there's much more here going on than a virus, because you can't have one group of people going out and congregating and there's no threat of a virus spreading, and another group of people going out and there's a massive threat, and this is now a super spreader event, and this is now a national, you know, healthcare emergency. And this continues to this day, by the way. We had the massive congregation of folks just enjoying themselves at Lollapalooza in Chicago. I don't have a problem with that at all. But then yet you have another group of folks, the Harley Davidson enthusiasts that went to Sturgis and all got together there. That was now a super spreader event. So the party goers in Chicago, not a super spreader event, no threat of the virus. The folks in Sturgis, yeah, again, they're being attacked. And I mean, you could list all of the examples of this. So immediately, any critical thinking person would then say, well, there's more to play here because a virus doesn't have an ideology and isn't specific to just one specific group of people. The other thing was, you know, we were told how hospitals were full, they were overwhelmed, nurses were working themselves into the ground, which they did in a lot of cases. I'm not saying that was not the case, but then, you know, we had viral TikTok videos going on constantly. Again, it just doesn't add up. We had the people making their rounds on the Fear Factory platforms, the old media, telling you how afraid you need to be of this virus, which by any measure has a very, very low fatality rate. Anyway, you were told that to fear this by these folks that were not afraid of it, you know. You could again list your examples, whether it's the governor of California that had his family in a restaurant without masks, everybody getting together and having dinner like a normal family. Again, I don't have a problem with that. But then you lock down your entire state and lock down people in their houses and tell them they cannot, you know, hang out with their family members. You had Nancy Pelosi going to get her hair done without a mask in a salon, having a private meeting where most salons are shut down. Without a mask on, of course, right? So she wasn't afraid of that. You had the governor of Michigan that essentially locked down her state and then climbed aboard a plane and flew to Florida to vacation with her family. And we could go on and on and on. Name it's a politician. It could be left or right. It doesn't matter. Name the celebrity. Name the propagandist. These people that are telling you how afraid you need to be of this virus, they're not afraid of it. So the other thing that really, really was one of the big aha moments for me too was there was someone in our community and our network that said that, MC, there's something nefarious going on here because I can go and, well, let me rephrase that. He said, there's something nefarious going on here because I wanted to go and buy flowers for my wife from our florist that's down the street, lives in our community, great, great family. We've bought flowers from them our entire lives. I couldn't walk down the street to go buy flowers for my wife from my local florist, but I could get in my car, drive to Walmart, and I could buy the same flowers. I couldn't go to church this Sunday where we have a community. We've all been, you know, families for generations have gone to church together. That's where they all congregate. We couldn't do that, but we could get in our car and go to Costco, and there's, you know, 50 plus people in there. So a lot of folks started to see this kind of stuff. And then you realize that, listen, there's nothing, this has got nothing to do with the virus. This is about control. This is about government overreach that we have not experienced globally, all at the same time, right? So essentially, people were in a state of shock and fear, and governments grabbed as much power as they possibly could at that given point in time. Now, where is this headed with the overreach and overreaching and the power grab of governments? They haven't stopped, and they continue to push, right? And they continue to push forward. Every single day, they continue to push and push and push. So essentially, if you look at the information that's available for everyone, and you could do your own research, you could come to your own conclusions where this is all going. But essentially, the mask was step one. If they could mask up the population and accept to put a mask on their face and have people stay in their house, there's a lot of other things that you can then convince them to do, which will follow. Like, for example, and take the injections. And it now, as we could see at the time of recording, it's not just going to be one, it's going to be many, and it looks like it's going to be every 6 months. That's where that's headed if folks do not stand up and push back to this. Once that is established, then central bank digital currencies can be rolled out, because once you have a database with everyone's health information on, and you then have injection passports, which are being rolled out, you can now attach central bank digital currencies to that database. So if your health records, you have your passport, which is, you know, like a driver's license and a government issued passport, you now have your injection passport, you can now attach the central bank digital currencies to that, and eventually a social credit score, which they already have in China. And as we see in Australia, they are now also saying, well, we should attach a government-issued ID to people that want access to social media. So that'll all come together. That's where it looks like it's going. Again, do your own research, come up with your own conclusion, but that is what we're seeing where this is going if they don't push back. And again, history doesn't necessarily repeat itself, but it sure does rhyme if you start to see and look at this. And please don't get caught in the weeds. You know, they want people arguing. They want people divided. The divide and conquer strategy is as old as time. Again, history doesn't necessarily repeat itself, but it sure does rhyme. Divide and conquer, divide and conquer. How do you take over a population of people? Well, you send in some of your people ahead of time to figure out everyone that is coexisting in that particular geographical area. And then you figure out a way to turn them all against each other, right? And have them all fighting with one another. And then you invade them, and then you conquer them. And they're easier to conquer, easier to control. It's as old as time. So please don't get sucked in to the divide and conquer, left versus right, mask versus non-mask, injection versus non-injection. Do not get sucked into any of that, because that's the plan. The plan is to keep you fighting with one another. Your neighbor is not your enemy. As I mentioned already, the war is between the elites and we the people. Ron Paul just had a conference. He's also a previous guest on this podcast. And he shares it's the war on you was the name of his conference, and it's the war on the people. It's been done by the elites. It's between the elites and the people. It's not between you and your neighbor. All this other stuff is just to basically turn you against one another. So don't fall into that. Lesson number three is victors write the history. The victors write the history, as Winston Churchill would say, right? And Napoleon, history is just a set of lies agreed upon. So the war is on, been declared on you. The war is on you by the elites utilizing their governments. There's three types of war. There's information, there's economic warfare, and there's kinetic warfare. The war has been declared on people, whether they realize this or not. How has this been done? Well, the first thing was that they closed down small and medium enterprises, which employ, by the way, 70% of the population in the United States. So they locked them down while they allowed the mega corporations to stay open. And that was to economically destroy small and medium enterprises. So they locked them down. Most of them went out of business, and those that survived could open up, but there was restrictions. And of course, every business owner knows that there was a cost to opening back up. That was the first step. The second step was, is at the moment that they're going to raise taxes on the people that survived. The third step is that in the United States, for example, they increased the amount of IRS officials that will audit small businesses. And then the fourth step is the enhanced unemployment benefits, which is basically this universal basic income that they've been trying to push for a very long time. But essentially, they are paying people a lot of money to stay home. And what has this resulted into? There's a massive shortage of people that are working. So there are so many small business owners that cannot find anyone to work. You try to go to a restaurant right now, every single restaurant that I've been into, when we walk in the door, they say, please bear with us. We appreciate your patience. We are short-staffed. Everywhere we go, there's a shortage of workers because people are being paid to stay home. And this is used as a weapon because small business owners are just trying to survive. They're now going to battle higher taxes. They are going to have to fork out more fees potentially to be audited or fight audits, and they can't find anyone to help them. And the fifth part, which will be the final nail in the coffin for a lot of small businesses, is that the injection mandates, which has now been forced down, all in many sectors of the economy, will have to be enforced by businesses themselves, not by the government. They're telling businesses to do this. So in New York City, for example, too, small businesses, they have the injection passports, but they're going to have to enforce that. So it's the small business owner, the restaurateur, that has to ask the person coming and knocking on the door to see their papers. It's not the government that's doing that. Yes, in other parts of the world, we've seen the terrifying footage of people sitting in a cafe in France and the police is walking into the cafe asking people to see their papers. Again, have we not learned anything from history? History doesn't necessarily repeat itself, but it sure does rhyme. Where else have we seen very, very well-armed military men, it looks like paramilitary troops, but essentially it's the police, ask people for papers. So businesses are going to have to do that, and that's going to put even more stress on them. So that might essentially be the straw that breaks the camel's back. So you have this massive attack, this war on small businesses, which employs 70% of the population. So now they're going out of business and continue to go out of business. So what happens to mega corporations? Well, they're being handed down mandates and they're enforcing mandates. And this has a result of the following, that the total economy is being so disrupted. And if you look at, you know, sectors of the economy like healthcare, there is going to be a massive disruption in healthcare because there's a lot of healthcare professionals that are not going to participate in the injections, and they're going to resign, right? And their positions are not going to be filled. There's not people that could fill the vacancies. So there's a shortage of medical professionals, which will lead to a lot of stress on the healthcare system. And in the United States, for example, we're finishing up the summer, going into the fall, which is usually the flu season. So people get sick in the fall and in the winter. So you're going to have more people getting sick. There's already stress on the healthcare system. And by the way, there's a lot of people with a lot of other diseases that need healthcare that are not going to be able to get that. So you're going to see a massive disruption in all sectors of the economy. That's just an example. You're going to see a disruption in, let's just say, the law and order sector of the economy. You know, there's a lot of police officers that are resigning. because they are now being mandated to get the injections. The same with people working at fire departments. So things that people take for granted as far as infrastructure in their communities are not going to be there when they need it or want it. The other thing is, you know, you're obviously going to see a lot of business closures. You're going to see a lot of people stop working and go on unemployment, which is really, really going to put a lot of stress on the entire economy. And by the way, there's a thread here. The thread is they are attacking your source of income of you, right? We the people, they're attacking the sources of income of people. That's what is done strategically. The other areas that you're also under attack is we're going to see a lot of shakeup in the housing market. We've had the eviction moratorium and the foreclosure moratorium, and that is no longer now in place. So you're going to see a ton of evictions. And by the way, small landlords have suffered a lot through this process because they couldn't evict people, right? But they are now able to evict people. So people are going to lose their homes. And there's also going to be people that are going to go through the foreclosure process. So there's going to be a massive, massive shakeup in the housing market. All of this lockdowns for the last 18 months, and it's already in play, and continued lockdowns and uncertainty and chaos and disruption in the economy is going to lead to supply chain disruptions. It's already been going on for 18 months, but that's going to impact a lot of things that people take for granted and need, like food. It's going to impact your food supply. So if you're listening to the show, you probably haven't heard this anywhere else. And if you did, great. But you better be prepared for food shortages because that's coming. Other areas of attack. Social Security, they just put out a report that because of the virus, again, that's going to be the scapegoat for everything. Social Security was bankrupt before the virus came. But because of the virus, they're now going to run out of money even sooner. I think it's 12 years or something that they said they're going to run out of money. So Social Security is essentially gone. Pensions are borrowing more money right now. Do your own research. Look it up. Pensions are borrowing more money right now than they have for the past decade. I think the last time they borrowed this much money was 2008 because they don't have any money. They're borrowing all this money to try and generate a return to make back the money that is gone. It's gone. And this is going to impact public and private pensions. And of course, if you want to read more about pensions and the retirement crisis, you know, Robert Kiyosaki's got a great book out, Who Stole My Pension? And of course, the next market pullback will be the attack on people's retirements. So if they lose the money in the stock market, if there's a stock market crash. So that is what's going on. And, you know, the reason why I call this lesson from history, the victors write history, is that a lot of this is not shared because the people that are currently in control of everything, they're putting out the information and not telling you what's going on. They're not telling you that you are under attack. There's a war on you. The closest thing that's come out on this is using the Department of Homeland Security. They have put out basically terror threats, which are folks that are not going to go along with any COVID mandates, and of course, folks that still dispute the 2020 election, that still believe that, we weren't really told everything that happened in the 2020 election. So that has been shared a little bit, but they essentially nobody's going to tell you their information that we're sharing with you here. This is an unbelievable time. We're seeing stuff that should scare people beyond belief. I'll give you a couple examples. I listed what was going on in France, where there's mass protests, by the way, across Europe. Thousands of people in England, France, the Netherlands, Belgium, Italy, you name your country, there's thousands of people protesting. For France at the time of recording, it's the eighth week now in a row that they're protesting. The footage that came from Paris was of these police going through cafes and asking for people's injection passports. I mean, that should have the hair on your back stand up. Any person out there, I'll give you another example. I grew up in South Africa under a totalitarian government, and there were actually pass laws. So Africans that were, Africans that were black had to carry a passbook on them. And they lived in a certain area and they worked in a certain area. And while they were traveling from where they live to where they work, if they were pulled over, they were asked for their papers, their passbook. And if they weren't allowed or authorized to be where they were arrested. So there was many protests on the pass laws and where passbooks were burnt. And you've probably seen that if you looked into anything that happened during apartheid in South Africa. So this kind of stuff is very eerie to see this being played out again. And because the victors write history, they don't want you to know any of these things. That's why it's not shared and it's not out there. Another thing that that George Gammon actually talks about, great show, The Rebel Capitalist, is that one thing that people are completely missing about this whole picture too is that it's just incredible to see how governments are now mandating or telling businesses who they can and cannot conduct business with. So what he was referring to was the injection passports, for example, in New York City. So the New York state government is telling you, the business owner, who you can and cannot conduct business to or with. So you cannot do business with someone that doesn't have an injection passport. And he was just saying too that this was basically Jim Crow 2.0, because there's a two-tier society now of people that have decided that is in their best interest and their family's interest to take the injection. They're treated one way, and people that have decided to, that is in their best interest and their family's best interest not to take it, they're being treated differently. And in a free society, folks, everyone should decide what's best for themselves and their family and make decisions based on that. And when everybody does that, communities are stronger and society is much, much better off, because that's actually a free society. So it's very, very, very scary stuff. Lesson number four, human history is the history of ideas. You know, there have been some really bad ideas. A great interview I did on my podcast was with Mr. G. Edward Griffin, where we talked about individualism versus collectivism. And collectivism simply can go by a lot of different names. It could go by socialism, communism, fascism, which by definition of Benito Mussolini is the merger of state and corporate powers, which is essentially what we're seeing now across the world, where corporate powers have basically blended in and become sort of, you know, part of the government, or they're operating in lockstep and hand in hand. But essentially, there's been some terrible, terrible ideas, which has resulted in a lot of human suffering and resulted in poverty, global poverty, and massive amount of human suffering and just deaths. There's no bigger body count than collectivism. I mean, you add socialism, communism, and fascism together, and I don't think anybody there's anything on the planet that has resulted in the death of more people than those ideas. But we also have amazing ideas as humans and as a species. We've had incredible ideas: individualism, self ownership, self control, taking responsibility, owning our own outcomes, acting in our self-interest, figuring out this is what I want for my life, for myself and for my family, and realizing after I decided that that's what I want, I have to produce and create value to as many people as I possibly can, because if I do that and I serve my community and the world and produce and create all this value, I'm going to be able to get that. Free markets, free minds, ideas, just free ideas, the ability to talk freely and discuss and share ideas, you know, the freedom to speak to one another and share ideas without resulting in a fight. Just think of how many relationships has been damaged, you know, the past 18 months. People can't even talk to one another anymore. I mean, discussion and talking about things and it's something that, you know, having these free and open discussions is the basis of creativity. You learn from others. You're like, oh, I never thought of it this way. Maybe I'll try it that way. I mean, that's what it's all about. So there's been horrible ideas, horrible, horrible, horrible ideas. And then there's been amazing ideas. And human history is the history of ideas. And right now, you know, I said that there's a war going on, and the war is information and the war is economic, but the war is also a war of ideas. You know, will collectivism win this war, or will individualism and freedom win? I mean, there's a lot at stake here. there's a lot at stake. I'm going to end on our history doesn't have to be our destiny. The final lesson from history. History does not have to be our destiny. You know, there's a model and a framework shared by Dan Sullivan in Strategic Coach, Dangers, Opportunities, and Strengths. And this is a phenomenal model, because essentially how it works is, first is you have to identify all the dangers for yourself, your family, your business, and your investments. You know, and I do this exercise, by the way, every day. I get up and I look at, okay, what are the dangers out there? What should I be aware of? What should I be looking at? What is a threat to myself, my family, my business, and my investments? And then after I do that threat analysis, I then start to see opportunities within that threat. And there's a plethora of opportunities. And then after that, you start to look at, okay, what are the strengths that I have? What are the skills, the capabilities that I have to capitalize on these opportunities? And if I don't have them, who do I need to partner with? What relationships do I have that I can partner with that have the skill sets and the strengths and the capabilities to help me accomplish on capitalizing on those opportunities? But you have to start with the dangers, right? You can't hide your head in the sand. You have to face reality. And right now, it's especially important that people are going to have to face reality. So our history doesn't have to be our destiny. I'm going to share a quick story with you. I recently did a road trip, and I stopped in Charleston, South Carolina. We did a horse carriage tour. Great, beautiful city. Beautiful, beautiful place. Love history. So the guide was great. And he told the story of this one gentleman that during the Civil War, again, Civil War, the nation was, you literally had a civil war in the United States. Nation was in a state of shock, chaos, confusion, uncertainty, all of the same stuff again that we are experiencing right now. And this gentleman saw the dangers, the threats out there, and saw the opportunity within the plethora of opportunities within this ocean of threats, and then used his skills and his capabilities. He was a trader, and he was a great negotiator. So he looked at this, and he said, okay, we're at war. And he also saw that there was the unions had a blockade in the harbor, and there's rivers in Charleston, South Carolina, where you actually have to come up to. But there was a blockade by the Union, so the Confederates couldn't get supplies. He leveraged relationships. He negotiated. He traded. And basically, he played both sides of the war. He sold to both sides. And that gentleman understood what was going on. He understood the money system. He understood business. He was seeing the threats, but he saw the opportunities. He sold to both sides, negotiated with both sides, and only took gold and silver as payment. Well, what happened after the war? Both currencies essentially collapsed, the greenback and the grayback. Most folks are not even familiar that the Confederates had their own money. Graybacks was gone, but he took gold and silver. He became the richest man in Charleston. He had built a mansion, which is one of the biggest mansions, I think still the biggest one in Charleston. And that's still in his family today, left a legacy for his family. Now, if that isn't an inspirational story for the time that we're living in right now and all the challenges that we're facing, I don't know what would be, because that person decided that Our history doesn't have to be our destiny. He created his own destiny. And you can do the same thing during all of this. Like I said, Fourth Industrial Revolution, the Great Reset. This will be the greatest depression of the 2020s. But you can position yourself, your family, your business, and your investments to be on the greatest wealth transfer that we've ever seen on this planet, which is already happening. More millionaires and billionaires have been created than at any other point in time within the last 18 months. So yeah, there's a plethora of opportunities. So it's a great lesson. So a couple of takeaways here. You know, one of the things that you absolutely need to have, there's three things that I'm going to share with you that are actionable things that you could do right now. Okay, steps to take to position yourself on the right side of this wealth transfer. Step number one, decentralization. You have to figure out how to decentralize yourself from systems and structures which are in the process of collapsing, because it's happening. We are in the process of it. So here's a couple of quick things just to mention. You know, on the money side, you could have a stable of horses. You could decentralize yourself from the global financial system and the money system by, for example, putting some cash away, US dollars, because we're still on the US dollar standard, in a insurance company and practicing infinite banking, and that decentralize yourself from the banking system. You could have some money in gold and silver, which has been money for centuries, decentralizing yourself from the money system. Those who held gold and silver during money system changes were positioned on the right side of it. You can also position yourself in Bitcoin, for example, which is the new digital gold, if you will. So there, and by doing that, you are essentially your own bank. You can buy your Bitcoin, transfer it to a cold storage wallet, and hold it. You're your own bank. And that's what I mean by decentralization. Decentralization with food, for example, is the ability to grow your own food, the ability to feed yourself when you don't have access to food by having emergency food storage set up already, having access to water and drinking water, having access to things that could generate electricity if there's a power failure. That's what I mean by decentralizing from the food system, from the electrical grid, and so forth. And there's many different ways that you can decentralize yourself. Just in those two areas, find a way to decentralize yourself in all of the other areas, and think about all the areas that you are plugged into a centralized system. Second thing that you can do is have a strategy, a wealth strategy, not just putting your money somewhere and do the same thing that you've been doing all the time. Have a strategy. Have a strategy. Build a personalized and customized strategy that prepares you for anything and everything, because anything and everything will happen. Number three, figure out how to generate your own independent income. You have to figure out how to generate your own independent income, either through businesses or investments. And you have to have multiple streams of income. So you have to be able to generate your own income in this environment. Because if you do, you don't have to take orders from anyone. You don't have to, you don't have to follow any of the mandates if you're in charge of your own independent income. But if you are stuck to a job and you're forced by employer, you're going to have to make some hard decisions. So make the hard decisions now when you have control over them, and figure out a way how to generate your own independent income. And we are, by the way, providing a lot of this in our programs. So for example, in Cashflow Core, you can figure out how to decentralize yourself from all of the systems. We share how you can build a personalized and customized strategy to protect your capital and your cash flow, and position you, your family, your business, and your investments on the right side of this wealth transfer. In our new program, Cashflow Creator Formula, which is launching September 13th, so it'll be the first group that we will put through that, we're going to teach you how to start your own business, and a business for the Fourth Industrial Revolution. We're going to teach you how to grow and scale a business. We're going to teach you how to take an existing business online, because you're going to have to do that. And we're going to teach you how to build a platform from which you can communicate your message and your brand 24/7, 365 days a year. That's cashflowninja.com/creator. Cashflowninja.com/creator. It's a 4-week program. In this 4-week program, we're going to publish content every Monday, which you can work through on your own at your own pace. On Fridays, we have a live Q&A call, which I will be on, and you can ask me any question from the content which we published that week. It's a 4-week program. Again, cashflowninja.com/creator. And in that program, we're going to teach you how to generate your own independent income. Thank you so much for spending the most valuable resource, your time, with me for another episode of the cashflowninja.com. Until next time, live infinitely.
This presentation is for educational and informational purposes only. The information being presented and considered does not consider your particular financial objectives or situation, and it does not make personalized recommendations. This material is not intended to replace the advice of a qualified tax and legal advisor or other qualified professionals, and you should not use the information in place of a customized consultation with a licensed professional regarding your specific personal financial objectives, situation and needs. We believe the information provided is reliable, but we do not guarantee its accuracy, timeliness, or completeness.